Hello, everybody. My name is Jake McGrail, and alongside me are Ollie Nicholas and Diana Hong of CITR Sports, broadcasting live from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the unceded grounds of the Musqueam people. You're listening to Thunderbird Eye on CITR 101.9. Always keep you up to date with the latest UBC Thunderbirds news and stories. Playoff season continued this past week, and the biggest news is that UBC women's hockey are Canada West champions.
Woo!
Diana and I were both at game one of that series. Diana, you were there for game two as well, correct?
Yep, both very, very fun.
Very, very, very fun, yeah. As long as you were a UBC fan and not one of the many Huskies fans that made the trip from Saskatchewan.
Yeah. Oh, really? They had away fans.
Yeah, there was a lot of away
there
fans,
were, I would say like 40% of the people were Huskies
you know what?
Fans. They traveled well.
I respect that.
Yeah, coming all the way from Saskatchewan. Didn't go their way. We'll get into that very shortly. The other stuff that happened besides women's hockey taking care of business here at home was women's volleyball. They continued their push for a conference championship. Baseball and softball, they headed down to the States once again. After we get to all that, we will hopefully be able to chat with our very own Mike Liu. He is not here yet. We're going to expose him on the air. He is late to the show. But once he does get here after the break, we will be talking to him about the end of his time in Beijing at the Olympics. But first, we have to start with the biggest news of the week, and that is women's hockey.
Yes, sir. It was an exciting weekend for the Thunderbirds as the women's hockey team won their fourth Canada West Championship after a weekend sweep against the Saskatchewan Huskies. There was quite a turnout of Huskies fans at the Doug Mitchell Thunderbird Sports Center, but it wasn't enough for the visitors as the Thunderbirds dominated the Canada West Final Series.
Game one of the best of three series was on Friday night as the Thunderbirds hosted the Canada West Championship. The Thunderbirds earned a dominant 4-0 win, putting them within touching reach of the title.
Yeah, UBC, they set the tone really early in this game. It was less than 5 minutes in when first-year T-Bird Grace Elliott kept the puck on a 2-on-1 rush and finished the play herself for her second goal of the playoffs. And then Thunderbirds rookie Mia Bird followed with her first career U Sports goal, doubling the lead, not just her first playoff goal, but her first goal of the entire season.
Yep. Ashley McFadden added another with just 33 seconds left in the period to close it with a 3-0 lead just in first period. And they made it fourth in the second period as Shaylee McConnell got a shorthanded breakaway off a pass from captain Kenzie Robinson and scored, which, by the way, I have a really good footage of this. I'm plugging UBC right here.
The video footage of it? Or?
Yeah, video footage. I got a really good one, and it's very nice.
It's very nice. You can find it online.
Plug the UBC.
Yep.
The Thunderbirds fully dominated this game, outshooting the Huskies 16-4 in the first period and 43-13 on the night. Saskatchewan did not have more than 5 shots in any of the 3 periods, despite having 2 of the game's 3 power play opportunities. Yeah.
As I mentioned off the top, Diane and I were both there for that one. I'm happy that the game I was able to go to was such a dominant win. It was a lot of fun to watch. I remember we were taking bets on whether the Huskies would be able to reach 15 shots for the entire game.
But they didn't.
They did not do that. It was quite insane, given that this is the finals, supposedly the two best teams in the league, and then UBC just completely dominated them. Also, Mike Liu is now here in the studio. He's made it.
Oh my God.
Before we get to game two, we got to ask Mike, how's your day gone?
It's been an eventful one, to say the least.
What took you so long, Mike?
Why wasn't Corey ever asked us?
Because he didn't show up after the show started.
I feel that I plead the fifth. It's not a thing here, but like, you know.
We'll give you your rights here.
Okay.
I see you repping that Team Canada gear right there. I'm very excited to hear more stories in a bit.
Look, the Team Canada gear is going to his head. He's walking around campus like an Olympic athlete. Doesn't matter. Walking around with his headphones on. I think I saw him with some sunglasses on the other day, strolling through campus.
No, you didn't know he's an Olympian.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Okay,
big man
you.
On campus.
We're going to get onto it. First question I'm going to ask is, what sport did he compete in?
Okay, we got to focus on women's hockey.
Yeah, women's hockey.
The secondary athletes here on campus.
All right. Okay. Back to women's hockey. Game two was a lot lower scoring, with neither side able to break the deadlock. UBC again carried the play, outshooting the Huskies 13-6 in the first period and 13-2 in the second, but couldn't find a way past goalie Cameron Drever.
Yeah, the third period also scoreless, a more even shot count of 7-5 UBC, meaning that this game went to overtime. The Huskies, they had the chance to force a third and final game if they were able to get this win.
However, that wasn't the case, as the hero was Chanreet Bassey of UBC.
Woo!
The Canada West leading scorer grabbed the puck less than 2 minutes into overtime, calmly slid between the legs of Drever for the game's lone goal, and UBC claimed their first Canada West title since 2017.
On the defensive end, the Thunderbirds goalie Elise Hudgens was named as the U Sports Women's Athlete of the Week as she posted back-to-back shutouts, stopping all 27 shots that she faced in the series. On the other side, Drever stopped 73 out of 78 shots for the weekend.
Yeah. That's not even that bad.
That's pretty good.
73 out of 78 saves. Not much more you can ask out of your goalie when you're getting outshot 78-27 over two games.
Yeah, I mean, hats off to her, though. It was very good in her way. It's just she just didn't.
Yeah, she gets to be the star of the team.
Yeah, basically. The Thunderbirds will have some recovery time before they head to the U Sports National Championship Tournament in PEI from March 24th to 27th, aiming to capture their first ever national championship.
Yeah, and because playoffs for all other conferences besides Canada West are still ongoing, we don't know what seed UBC will be at nationals or who they might end up playing first. Currently, they are ranked number 4 in the country with a strong 18-6 overall record, and they are heading into nationals on a hot streak, having won 5 games in a row by a combined score of 18-3. So hopefully that carries over and they don't get rusty from this extra week off. And the only team that is as close to as hot as the women's hockey team right now is women's volleyball, who continued their perfect postseason play with 2 wins this past weekend to book themselves a spot in the Final Four.
And hey, on Saturday, they played really strong. They went up against the Calgary Dinos and absolutely destroyed them in straight sets. First set, they won 25-15, the second, 25-20, and the third, 25-16. I mean, that's as close to dominant as you get.
Yeah, thanks for playing Calgary.
UBC's defense was strong in this match as they held the Dinos to a 0 hitting percentage, with Calgary recording just 19 kills compared to 42 for UBC. The Thunderbirds also had 58 digs, led by Casey Jost, who had 19.
On offense, UBC shared the wealth as 4 players had between 7 and 9 kills. Jade Robertson led the way with 9 on a 429 hitting percentage, along with 3 blocks. Claire Cosrini, oh my god, I'm sorry, had 8 kills, 4 digs, 4 blocks, and 3 aces.
Yeah, Sunday's match, a lot more dramatic, a lot more close than that first one was, as UBC took on Mount Royal in the Cougars' home gym. Both teams had already clinched their spot in the Final Four at that point, but first seed in the group and a matchup against Group B's second seed in the semifinals was on the line.
And, well, unlike their first game, the Thunderbirds had a much tougher task against the, well, let's just be honest, a better MRU team. They were absolutely blown out in the first set, 25-15. They only got 8 kills, but they committed 9 attack errors in the set. They managed to figure something out, managed to get back, won the second set, 25-22.
MRU again turned up the heat in the third and recorded another blowout victory, this time 25-16. And again, UBC then responded with a close victory in the fourth, taking it 25-23.
In the final set, the Thunderbirds avoided falling into an early hole like they'd done multiple times early in the night, as their offense caught fire with 8 kills on a 353 hitting percentage in the set, paring them to a 15-12 win and a 3-2 win in the match.
Yeah, Elise Petit was the star for UBC. She had a career-high 22 kills, breaking the previous career best that she'd set the previous weekend, really heating up at the right time. She is. Bryn Passon was a strong secondary option. She had 15 kills, 6 digs, and 3 aces, while Kayla Oxland had 42 assists and 11 digs.
However, it was a struggle offensively for the rest of the team. Outside of Petit and Payson, everybody else combined just for 16 kills on a negative 0.059 hitting percentage. In particular, Trinity Solecki and Erica Vermette struggled with a combined 4 kills and 10 attack errors, although Solecki did have 6 digs and 2 blocks.
Also of note is that star attacker Kara Kovacs struggled in both matches with a combined 5 kills and 6 attack errors against Calgary and MRU after averaging 11 kills a night over the previous 2 weeks.
Despite that, the Thunderbirds are 5-0 up in the playoffs and have beaten 2 of the 3 other teams that have made it to the Final Four in MRU and Alberta. They've also climbed up to 7 in the national rankings.
Yeah. Pretty impressive how you can list those players who are struggling and yet at the same time they're still beating these other elite teams, just showing how good this team can be. And their semifinal, this matchup this weekend, is against the one team they haven't yet faced in the playoffs, and that is old rival Trinity Western. The Spartans, they're the number one team in the country, but they lost in 5 sets to Alberta this past weekend, which dropped them to the 2nd seed in their group. So maybe UBC a little bit unlucky to have to face them in the semifinals, but the way they're playing right now, they should feel confident against anyone.
Absolutely, but I mean, hey, TW, they're a national powerhouse. Like,
well, they're always up there.
You can't count them out.
Alberta hosts the entire Final Four, so UBC will play the Spartans there on Friday, and then either the gold or bronze medal match on Saturday. The Thunderbirds are 1-3 against the Spartans this season.
Hopefully they can qualify for nationals and make it a 3rd winter sports team, making it to nationals. If they beat the Spartans, they will definitely be there. If they lose and then win the bronze medal, they'll probably be there.
Depends on how seeding plays out.
It depends on how teams in other conferences do, but just win on Friday and they're in.
All right, moving on to baseball. After a triumphant return to Termline West Stadium the weekend prior, the Thunderbirds baseball team ducked south of the border again for a final preseason tune-up with the Oregon Tech Owl. In Klamath Falls, which is basically California, for 4 games in 2 days, the Thunderbirds earned a split series, bringing their preseason to a close much the way it started.
Whipping Wind transformed the Steen Sports Park into a slugger's paradise on Saturday as balls routinely soared past infielders and sent ERAs skyrocketing. In the 2 games that day, the teams combined for 42 runs and 24 extra base hits.
UBC came out on top in the first game, turning in a stellar defensive performance considering the conditions, winning 16-3. Every Thunderbird had a good day at the plate, but Ty Penner's 4 IBIs and Mike Fitzsimmons' 4 hits earned highest marks.
Yeah, on the other side, Owls pitcher Jacob Miller gave up 8 earned runs in 1/3 of an inning, as in he gave up 8 runs before they could get 2 outs in the first inning, which is an ERA of 216, if anyone is counting that stat. Thunderbirds, they had 9 runs on 9 hits in the first inning and then never looked back from there.
Unfortunately, UBC got a taste of their own medicine. They gave up 9 runs in a single inning in part of Game 2. Midway through the 5th, they led 3-1. And then going into the 6th, they trailed 10-3. How that got there, nobody knows.
we don't want to look.
No. The teams traded runs until the game finished 14-9 for the Owls.
Despite the loss, Nolan Weger continued to antagonize Oregon Tech pitching in the wind, swatting 2 dingers, and UBC had 5 home runs in the game. Unfortunately, they were all solo home runs.
Calmer conditions awaited the team on Sunday, and a couple of relatively lower scoring games should have followed as a result. The Thunderbirds didn't get the memo in Game 1, apparently, and ended up winning 11-3.
Yeah, the pitching coaches on both teams are going to be absolutely furious with how this weekend played out. The Thunderbirds, they pulverized the Owls to the tune of 9 more extra base hits. They had 5 doubles, 2 triples, and 2 homers. Noah Orr had 4 hits overall, and Nathan Shute had 4 RBIs. Orr only needed a home run to complete the cycle, and Shute only needed a triple.
And again, credit to the Owls, who found a way to bounce back. On Sunday, they just turned UBC's offense into complete dust, quieting the bats and responding to the earlier dropping with a 5-3 win.
Finally, pitching proved crucial in the game, and it was Oregon Tech's Cody Dubray that outdueled UBC's Brett Corbeth, as both had solid outings. The Thunderbirds will be kicking themselves after this one, as they were unable to capitalize on four fielding errors from their opponents.
That loss meant that UBC finished the preseason barely under 500 at 12-13, a mediocre record, but considering only four of those 25 games were played at home, that's just fine under the circumstances. Yeah,
please, can we schedule more home games in the, preseason? Do teams not want to come to Vancouver? It's nice here.
It's a beautiful place, honestly. The weather's getting a little bit better. Yeah. The people are welcoming. I'm a new guy here. Come on down.
Yeah, maybe teams don't want to come and play in Vancouver in January, February.
Yeah, no, but... that's fair enough.
Well, to be fair, I was in California. It was like sunny every day, but here... As soon as I got back, it started raining, so I don't know if it's, like, the greatest condition.
It makes you appreciate it more.
Right.
Makes you appreciate the good times more when you have to suffer through a little rain.
Well, it's about ups and downs.
I like it.
Speaking of ups and downs, let's talk softball.
Were there ups?
There weren't ups, actually.
It was just a lot of downs.
But if you let me finish, Jake,
yeah,
I was going to say... This week was a down, but next week's going to be an up.
Oh, there we go.
But let's deal with the rocky period so we can appreciate the win next week.
Oh.
The softball team had a series to forget over the border this week as they were swept by the formidable East Oregon University Mountaineers over four games.
On Saturday, the East Oregon Mountaineers continued their winning ways with a twin bill sweep of UBC to extend their win streak to 8. They out-hit the Thunderbirds 9-5 in the series opener, despite a strong start for the Thunderbirds when Mia Valk, hit a 2-out homer to left field.
The score remained 1-0 until the fourth, when the Mountaineers hit a solo run to tie the match. And then they went ahead for good when the Birds surrendered two hits and committed a pair of errors, which is always fun. They allowed the Mountaineers to score 3 runs. They made it a score of 4-1.
Yeah, Game 2 started almost identically to Game 1. UBC went up 1-0 following a throwing error by EOU. The game then continued following the script from Game 1 with Eastern Oregon getting the run back with another solo homer that was nearly identical to the one from the first game.
Yeah, it's painful stuff there. EOU then got 2 runs in the second with the help of some UBC errors. A dropped fly ball with 2 outs also allowed 2 runs to be scored, making it a 3-1 game, and it ended up being 7-1 after a 3-run home run. 3-run home run. Wow. In the third, and 1 more tacked in the fifth.
Sunday was a new day for UBC. However, the story was sadly the same.
The ups and downs is just downs.
No.
It's been a decline.
Sadly, it was the same as the Mountaineers completed a sweep of the Thunderbirds in Oregon. They fell 6-3 in the first half of a doubleheader as Eastern Oregon outhit UBC by a 9-4 advantage, holding the Birds scoreless in 5 of 7 innings.
Yeah, the Mountaineers, they scored twice in the first to take a lead that they wouldn't relinquish. EOU then added on 3 runs in the third to extend their lead to 5-0. T-Birds then showed some fight in the fourth. Nicole Salas hit a 2-run homer, but weren't able to close the gap too much.
And the Mountaineers regained their 4-point advantage in the bottom of the fourth before Mia Valk had the last run of the game for UBC in the sixth. I mean, it was a good weekend for her.
Yeah. But, I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of other players on the team that need to play well, too.
And again, she scored on an EOU error. They ended the scoring at 6-3.
The final game of the weekend proved to be a closer battle through the first 5 innings with Eastern Oregon holding a 5-4 lead. UBC's Emily Scherer opened the scoring in the first with an RBI single, which was one of 2 hits in the game for the sophomore infielder.
The game was then taken away from the Thunderbirds in the bottom half of the sixth when EOU managed a 6-run inning, including an Abby Giles.
Who knows?
Maybe when there's ups, we'll figure it out.
She's an enemy. Doesn't matter if we pronounce her name wrong.
Yeah. grand slam. They then held the Thunderbirds off the board in the seventh to secure an 11-4 win and the sweep.
Yeah, so hopefully when softball plays again, it will be a bit of a different story. But for now, we will take a break for ads and PSAs. When we come back, we'll be talking to Mike about what his last couple weeks in Beijing were like.
Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Need a repair or service to your current ride?
Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located in room 36 of the UBC Life building. Our hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If you buy a bike from us, bring it back when you're done using it, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you.
Yep, you heard us right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs.
For more information about our buyback policy and to stay up to date on any COVID-19 inspired changes, find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
Unladylike Co. presents Bad Eggs, a film following the lives of Greek gods Persephone, Hades, and Eve, who have been plucked away from their myths and placed in the modern world. The film is available online from March 16th to 27th, with an in-person premiere on March 13th, 7 p.m. at the Norman Rothstein Theater. Be sure to be there. About 40% of UBC students experience food insecurity. Sprouts is hosting a weekly produce market from 10:30 to 1:30 every Monday in the Life Building. With produce from local farms, students are free to take whatever they want. Sprouts Cafe is open from Monday to Thursday and is offering 30 free meals a day, completely free and no questions asked. They also host Community Eats, a completely free hot lunch that is open for all. Stop by and support the Sprouts cause for sustainable, accessible food at UBC.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Thunderbird Eye on CITR 101.9. Now, this is not Mike's return to the show because he was on last week, but we didn't talk to him on the air much about his final couple of weeks in Beijing for the Olympics. We brought him on a late-night Zoom call back in February to discuss what had happened to that point, but Mike, what was the back half of the Olympics like?
The back half was a lot easier than the first half, I have to say. Relatively speaking, at least. The first couple of weeks were a bit chaotic. I mean, everybody hitting the ground, still getting their bearings within a country, in a new country, new environment, in an Olympics like no other. Once the sport started, once the opening ceremonies hit, I mean, hey, everybody got a little bit more relaxed, more chill. It's like, hey, sports are going on. Let's have a good time. And, like, it was great. I mean, we managed to get into a shift schedule, which allowed me to take a couple of breaks for myself from time to time. But, hey, it was great. And, I mean, everything went as smooth as you could possibly want.
Now, Ollie, you said you were going to grill him. Now's your chance.
No, I didn't want to grill you as such. But I did notice from the outside a lot of people were a little bit critical of the Olympics there when they watched it on TV because they saw winter sports happening within an industrial landscape. And everyone was like, this is really weird. Why has this happened? But like you said, there was people still had fun. It's still a big occasion for the athletes. And, you know, I'm sure, like you said, everyone had fun. But, like, was there a weird feeling from people? Like, this is bizarre. Forgetting COVID, more the, like, environment of where it was.
Well, actually, so something interesting that I didn't know until I talked with some of the Alpine athletes. They actually really liked the fake snow in, because, again, the Yancheng cluster where all the Alpine events were held, they don't get a lot of precipitation usually, so they have to make man-made snow. But they said that almost every major event in the world uses man-made snow. Usually it's a blend, but man-made snow tends to be more predictable than natural snow, which is why they enjoy sliding down that a lot more. But I mean, in terms of it being weird, I mean, it was just, again, the COVID, you said excluding COVID, but COVID was looming over it. Like in the dining halls, for instance, I don't know, we had dividers at one point. They were like completely opaque and it was just plastic and you're just sitting in your own cubicle eating. They made it clear plastic afterwards, but I mean, it was just always something there. But it felt pretty nice just to be able to like wander around. I mean, within the closed loop system, it was still just like a village vibe, which was really nice to see. And a lot of athletes did interact, which was also really, really awesome to see as well.
The celebrity. So I saw you on TV, kind of CBC Sports broadcast, especially for figure skating events. I did take a video of it if we like to post it on our Twitter or our Instagram. He's famous, man the myth. Anyways, so being able to go to the events live, like what are some events that you went and how was it like?
Oh, you want me to give a list? Oh my God.
Oh, he went all of them?
That was when we talked to you on the Zoom call, you had not been to an event live at that point and you were really hoping you'd be able to.
So one of the fun things was that I discovered that I could pretty much get in anywhere. And I just wandered around to different events, so I got to catch, men's figure skating, free skate, got to see some short track speed skating, got to see half pipes, ski cross, I went looping around, got to see a bit of bobsleigh, alpine, I mean, some of everything, so it was really nice, and I mean, to begin with, they didn't sell tickets, so they didn't really have many fans in the stands, and the ones that could get in were the very privileged few, and then they had some volunteers filling up the rest.
But skating, T, how was it like sitting beside our man, Roman?
It was actually, for context, my accreditation would basically, I would have to sit with athletes, and that's where I would be sitting. It was really interesting, actually. For instance, Keegan was very, very talkative and very, really good about like analyzing stuff from what I heard, and it was just like you were basically sitting with a bunch of athletes and you say, oh my God, this person's competing tomorrow, and you're like, wow, and then they're here watching, so it made for a good experience. And I mean, that's sort of like how the Olympics go out. I mean, different athletes getting a chance to catch different events.
No, you have to sit there because you are the celebrity.
Mike, one of the athletes famously for Team Canada,
of course.
Did you bring luck to any of the Team Canada members by attending their events? Were you able to see any fun gold or other medal performances?
I got a I got to see the ski half pipe, which was I got to see the ski half pipe qualifying runs. The final was a bit of a disaster. There was too much wind and not everybody could really get off a clean run. It is what it is. But I did get to see a couple of our ski cross athletes get some medals. So I mean, hey, that wasn't too bad.
Based on what you saw, if you had to pick one event to compete in yourself.
But you are an Olympian.
Partly based on, well, you can describe it in different ways. Based on purely you saw it, your eyes lit up, you thought, wow, I wish this could be me. That's one of them. And then also tell me the one that you literally think you could
okay,
do.
No. I feel you. To begin with, it's either figure skating or hockey. I mean, those two are the ones that I would love to compete in. The ones that realistically I could compete in. The one sport that doesn't involve risking your life is curling.
Oh, yeah, let's go.
Not to diss any of the curling because they are absolutely ridiculously good, but it's one of those where I'm like, I don't fear for my life.
That's very fair.
How many's in a curling team? Four.
Four, yeah.
Oh, guys.
We can make our own rink right here.
Varsity.
You just gotta make it so your job is you're not trying to place any of the shots.
Everyone has to play shots though.
No, you gotta make it so all you're doing is throwing it as hard as you can to knock the other team out. That's all you have to do, and then you can sweep. And you can be part of the team.
I mean, like, but again, it's like you don't get appreciation for how difficult curling is until you see it. Again, I say it's the one that I'm most likely to compete in, but it's one of the ones where I'm like, I'm not at risk of literally getting...
Yeah, like skeleton, you know?
No,
you can die.
Exactly. There's no way.
You can do it, but you'll be risking your life. But to be fair, like, I was watching curling events too, and it's like really intriguing, like, how strategic this sport is, so... Yeah, I feel you.
But it does make sense that it's the one you could do without training, without risking breaking a bone or something
exactly.
Like that.
No, I think you did skiing or something. Just send it one time.
Like a quad, like you do. Just do quad axle.
And the biathlon, give him a gun. Just send him out there.
Figure it out, man.
Do they actually shoot?
Yes,
bullets?
Yes. So, actually, we had a fun time at the airport about them checking bullets in. But no, they shoot live bullets, which is like you bringing a gun, you're bringing bullets, and they bring their own into the games and out. So it makes for an interesting.
Oh, like each athlete brings their own individual gun and their own individual bullets.
Well, they pack all the bullets together because that way
to get it through customs.
if it's loose, it could go off and it could go really bad.
So. But.
What surprised you most? Like, do you have a story or a moment or something you were like, that was really weird? Because I think everyone knows that at Olympic level, there's bizarre stuff going on behind the scenes sometimes.
Oh, well, I mean, there was a lot of things that were weird. I mean, some of the security checkpoints made no sense for cars. You just looked at it and you were like, this is literally useless. Why are you here? Could you please figure out a better system? Mm. And I mean, honestly, everything made sense, but from looking back at it, you're going for instance, all the security checks. I mean, every time I went into the Olympic Village, or every single venue, I would literally get patted down every inch of my body. And you're like, okay, yeah, right, that makes sense. And then you think about it, and you're like, you already know that everybody in this closed loop is probably going to be pretty safe. And you're doing these checks when we're leaving venues, not when we're entering. Why?
It's like you don't have the ability to go out and pick up more stuff, really.
No, no. Like one of my colleagues, he tried to he tested out the Chinese version of Amazon Taobao, basically to he wanted to see if he can order in something. So as a test run, he ordered in instant noodles. Guess what? They got confiscated.
Like at one of the security checks on the outside.
Yeah,
of the village.
Like it was like, oh, okay, all right. So let's not bring shoes in then.
But speaking of bringing stuff in, I guess, well, trading pins, you took some Canada, some, I don't know if you also took UBC pins, but.
Shout out Santa Ono for the hookup. I mean, I got a 50 UBC pins to trade. And hey, it was really fun. I mean, trading pack have so many pins that it's ridiculous. I did the Coca-Cola pin of the day thing where it's like you get a pin each and every day, and at the end you piece it together into a bottle.
Aww.
It's so cool. And then just being able to trade it with Team Canada gave us pins to trade as well, and it was really in demand. Like everybody really liked Team Canada's pins. They like basically everything from Team Canada, so it was like, hey, you want to trade some pins? I'm like, yeah, sure. And so it made for some fun. It was a good conversation starter with athletes, with staff, with coaches. It was really awesome. And with the volunteers especially, since they're actually all university students in Beijing. So trading the UBC pins, I mean, I met somebody, it was really cool. I met somebody who went to Tsinghua, which is one of Beijing's top universities. And she was originally going to come on exchange to UBC. Mm-hmm. So we ended up swapping a Tsinghua and UBC pin. So that was pretty neat.
That's cool.
How many different countries do you think you got in terms of pin representation?
I think at least 30 or 40. Which is solid stuff.
Hey, when the world's in a difficult place, it's nice to know that Mike's been out there piecing things back together.
International relations.
Of course.
Mike, you need to shout out. That's a positive story. I have one more question for Mike, the athlete. So in the scenario of you winning an Olympic medal, would you rather win a silver or be the person that sneaks a bronze, if you know what I mean?
I'd rather be the bronze.
Yeah?
Because I think that'd be more dramatic. You know what I mean? Mm. I mean, we got to see a little bit of that in Tokyo 2020. Friend of the show, Evan Dunphy, with a miraculous comeback for third. But no, I mean, honestly, the sneaking into third, it'd be more dramatic. I'd have a lot more fun with that.
Mm, I think you'd feel like you robbed. It'd feel like a heist.
Oh, yeah.
Silver. Absolutely. This is what I think about silver. You're just a bit like, Because, like, people always cheer on the bronze because they're like, you did it! Oh, my God, you got a medal! And obviously they love the gold, and the silver's always like, I'm here.
Too, especially in sports that have some sort of bracket, like if there's a gold medal game and a bronze medal game.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you want to go out with a win. Mm. Yeah, with a silver and that type of thing, you're going out with a loss, and in the bronze medal game, you get the win, and it's like a nice little high to end it.
And with the bronze, you got the bronze, but with the silver, you're thinking, could have been a gold.
Exactly.
Could have been a gold.
It's more like you lost a gold as opposed to you won the bronze.
Exactly. I think there is a research on it. The happiness of, like, when they compare, like, the happiness between, like, gold, silver, and bronze, the highest is obviously gold, excuse me, and bronze. And silver is, like, one of the lower ones. So there's a research on it. So.
Now, we mentioned earlier in the show you're wearing a very nice Team Canada jacket at the moment. But you mentioned that people like the different Team Canada stuff that was around. Like, what? How much gear did you get to bring home? What's it like?
Oh, sorry, like my gear, you say? We signed a contract that as soon as he arrives back to Canada, Diana, will be getting all the gear. But yeah, you can explain.
Have you gotten any yet?
No, today's the day. But he can explain.
You're going to take the jacket off his back right now.
Yeah, he can explain my gear right now, and I'll, like, be listing them out right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, Lulu did a great job. It was her first Olympics, so it was always going to be a little bit of a challenge. But they really stepped up. They fitted up. It was warm. It was nice. I mean, we got a lot of stuff. We got a suitcase full worth. And I mean, like, all the volunteers, like, they were telling us, like, this stuff is sold out in China. Like, everybody wants it because it looks so good. And I mean, honestly, it was great. And it fit right in. We stood out. It's pretty bright, as you can tell. But yeah, no, it's good stuff. And I mean, like, the gear was nice. No complaints there.
Did you take any TikTok videos? Because it seemed like
absolutely
Team Canada
not.
Gear. Oh, man. It's okay. I will tonight
when you give it
to me.
Sounds good.
And what were you up to during the closing ceremonies? Because during the opening, I think you remember you said you were in the village itself, or you were in the Team Canada, whatever, mission control center. were you in a similar situation for the closing ones?
Pretty much the same, and we just stayed on standby in case anything went wrong, and we were like, yeah, we need to send some help or something like that. But I mean, again, it's really limited to begin with. Getting into the bird's nest was always going to be one of those things where you're like, wow, didn't know that would happen. It'd be pretty cool if it did, but probably not going to happen. But no, it was good. And I mean, the closing ceremonies, it was pretty nice. It was really nostalgic. They brought back the 2008 Olympic theme, which was one of the first things that I remember about the Olympic Games. So hit a nostalgia, really fun. And I mean, it was just kind of nuts that everything was coming to an end so quick.
But despite all this Olympic, you're still, I mean, including being an Olympian and a celebrity, the athlete, you are a student. So how was it like taking midterm in the middle of the night in Beijing?
So about that, I ended up getting that deferred because I was like, dude, I'm not getting up at 3 a.m. doing this midterm, going back to sleep and getting up 3 hours later to start working. So I got that deferred. But I mean, all my professors were amazing. They accommodated it really well. And I had to do a couple quizzes, but they weren't really like, you have to do it at this certain time. I managed to fit it in early in the morning, go on with my day. The adjustment coming back was pretty tough, can't lie. But it was good.
Lucky that you came back and it was reading week and you didn't have to immediately go to your morning classes here on that time shift.
Oh, God. I needed that week just to sleep. It was just so draining.
So overall experience, thoughts, any specific stories that you'd like to highlight?
I mean, it was great. I got, again, for some people, maybe the Olympics are about just watching events, and you watch events. We were great. For me, I remember more of the people that I met, sort of like even with Team Canada, outside of Team Canada, volunteers. It was great. And again, like going back to those venue stuff, like the power plant thing, Big Air Shougang. So that used to be an industrial zone, like back in the 70s, 80s. And they sort of rebuilt it. And like, it looks weird on camera, but what it represents is sort of like this new purpose. And I feel that that's sort of what these games are trying to go for. And honestly, it was really well done. One of the things, so again, what was fun was that sometimes there was a little bit of a language barrier, and it led to some interesting conversations. I remember one time I was waiting for a bus, and one of the volunteers came up to me, and so in Mandarin, what they're asking, what they would have said was like, "Nia Wen Tima," and that's like, "Do you have a question?" But literally translated, this is what she said to me: "Excuse me, what is your problem?" I'm just standing there. I'm like, I know what you mean. If you said it to anybody else, they would be very offended.
Yeah, what is your problem, Mike?
Dial it back, please. I'm just waiting for this bus.
What is your problem?
It was so great. But yeah, no, stuff like that was just made it fun. A lot of interesting experiences, and overall, just being inside of that bubble in a winter games, hopefully like no other, because hopefully we will get rid of this pandemic. But yeah, it was great.
I've got to ask one more before we move on, Jake. Is this it for you, or will you go to another game?
I hope I'm going to go to another games. I mean, because I got to hang out with Team GB a lot in Yenching. They were really awesome. Helped
great
us out
guys.
A lot. Great, great guys.
Bunch of lads.
I'll be with them next year.
But man, they were telling me how Paris, like, they had a lot planned. Because I mean, hey, it's just a hop over the channel. So like, again, Paris promises to be pretty good. So hopefully I can get involved for more games.
Wait, there's another Olympics next year already?
No, 2024.
2024.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's kind of weird because we went 6 months and then now it's like, oh wow, it's actually 2 years away now.
Yeah, because I was gonna say, like, these Olympics are just like piling on top of each other right now. Like, what the heck's going on
at this point? Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike, for sharing all of these other stories about Beijing. We had three different shows just talking to you about you being an Olympian.
And thank you for the gears, sponsored by Mike. I will be coming next week with a top to bottom Lulu Team Canada gear.
Can't wait to see that.
Yes.
Now, before we wrap things up, there are a couple other sports to quickly cover.
All right. And I want to shout out our men's rugby team. They're doing real good work. They played against
the Carson.
The Carson team, yes. Men's rugby, they played against Pacific Pride, which is Team Canada's youth development academy. They tied with this team back in the Coastal Cup. Some pundits in the BC area, they predicted that Pride would walk away with a 3-point win. Instead, UBC won 50-10, which is very solid.
50-10.
Unfortunately, the try tracking is pretty not great. Yeah. there is a match report if you want to check it out. It's on bcrugbynews.com. Again, just great, great win top to bottom.
It took the Thunderbirds a little bit to get going as they didn't score until nearly 20 minutes into the game, but they then went up 26-0 by halftime and the lead never dipped below 21 points in the second half. The game is available to watch on the UBC Men's Rugby YouTube channel, although there is no audio.
Just a silent rugby game. Elsewhere, men's field hockey played the league-leading Vancouver Hawks and lost 3-2 in their final game of the regular season. Thunderbirds finished with a record of 7-8-1, tied for fourth in the Premier Division. I could not tell if that meant they qualified for the playoffs or not. A playoff schedule has not been released yet because not all the teams have done the regular season, but we'll see.
Okay, well, now looking forward to next week. We don't have as busy a week, but we have the track and field team down in Tucson, Arizona, competing in the prestigious Willie Williams Classic. I mean, I've made it up that it's prestigious, but it sounds good. The women's volleyball team will play against the Trinity West Spartans in the Canada West Final Four. On Saturday, we have the big one, the Canada West Men's Hockey Final, where the Thunderbirds will play the University of Alberta. The baseball team will host a series at UBC against the University of Idaho Yotes. The men's rugby team, a.k.a. the Carson Clan, will look to keep up their winning run against the University of Victoria Vikes. And last but not least, we have golf action. Both the men's and the women's team will be chancing their luck down in Las Vegas, where they will compete in the Paiute Battle.
Very good job there. It's almost like we never had anyone else do the outro.
I will be back. I'll be practicing my rock, paper, scissors next week with a Lulu gear. Thank you.
Unfortunately, the one cancellation that had to happen this week was EBC softball team because their field got apparently a bit messed up by the rain that has come in recently, and they've had to cancel games scheduled for both today and this weekend, but hopefully they'll be back in action soon. And with that, thank you for tuning in to Thunderbird Eye on CITR 101.9. Besides listening to the show, the best way to keep up to date with UBC Thunderbirds news and stories is to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at CITR Sports. Next up on CITR is the All Access Pass. For Thunderbird Eye, this has been Jake McGrill, Mike Liu, Diane Hong, and Ollie Nicholas with contributions from Corey Branson. Thank you for tuning in, and have a great rest of your day.